Watch this. No way!
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Cookie Jar Golf Podcast. I am Sam Williams and today we are joined by a special guest for an Eclectic 18 special. We have three-time appearant on the pod, Richie Ramsey. Richie, welcome.
Thank you. Virginity is well and truly lost. Three times.
Well, you are in a special club of a small number of guests who have been three-time appearances on the podcast. But you are the only person to have appeared in three Canada years, so congratulations.
All right.
It's a special club, all of your own. So we're here to talk about the Eclectic 18 and everything with you shortly, but before we get going, just how's things with you? Quick check-in ahead of the start of the season.
It's all good. Way to start the season in Abu Dhabi, so kind of excited for that. It's been up and down. Sort of month off, but really enjoyable. And just want to get going, just want to get in and test out what I've been working on the last few weeks with the swing and things like that. And kind of really enjoy Yaz Links as opposed to Abu Dhabi Golf Club was always great, but Yaz is more up my street. It suits my game better and I enjoy the golf course more. So I've got the course record there as well. So it kind of...
You dropped something there. Drop something, Richie.
Yeah. I might well pick that up.
Yeah, well, I hate to break it to you, but you have made a rod for your own back there. We are unlikely to release this podcast until after the tournament.
Oh, it's
so, I hate to say you put a bit of pressure on yourself now this weekend.
That's a cast I missed out, or someone else is going to like smash it by two or three.
Well, anyway, we wish you all the very best with it. And it is not the reason you're on the podcast. Obviously, we have interacted quite a bit over the last sort of couple of years about various things. And, you know, one thing that's really obvious is that you have not only a massive passion for the game itself, but also for golf course architecture. So when we were talking about this concept of an Eclectic 18 before Christmas, I thought, well, who better to road test the concept of a guest Eclectic 18 episode than with yourself? So over Christmas, we set you to task to go and develop your 18 holes. How was it? What was it like?
Yeah, it sounds easy. You're like, that's no problem. I'll reel this off. And then your mind just starts going and you disappear down the rabbit hole and then you're gone. Like, you're just like, oh, no, I can't do that. Like, that doesn't flow. So it was good fun and it kind of made me appreciate a lot of the places, and it made me understand there were some certain holes, particularly holes like, for some reason, 14, 17 were really difficult holes to pick. There was a lot of golf courses I could think straight away, 14th hole, that'd be great, 17th hole, that'd be great. I don't know if it's because it's the period of the round where you're kind of making decisions and it can make or break you. But you understand how the flow of golf courses and things go. So it was good fun to do.
And we should also say, for those that haven't checked out the initial Eclectic 18 podcast, there are a few rules. Rule number one, which is very key and I think makes it harder than anything, you can only pick one golf course once. So you can only have one hole from one golf course, and that makes it really tricky.
Yeah. I was breaking that rule.
Yeah, straight away. And we had to send you back to go and redo it. Second rule, the hole number must correspond to the scorecard. So if you pick the first at the old, it must be the first hole on your scorecard. It can't be the 17th or 18th, for instance. You must have played all the golf courses that are in that 18. And we try and take the yardage from a fairly consistent tee box so you get an idea of what those 18 holes look like. So, you know, without further ado, what was the process like? What did you go through? How did you go about building it all, I guess, from the beginning?
So I just jotted down the best holes, like, in my head, like, what are the most iconic holes that come straight to mind? And obviously, like, 17th old course, the first old course, and then suddenly you're like, I've broken that rule already, so I can't put. So you're like, right, this is going to be a lot harder. I thought about certain courses, like I thought about, right, I'm trying to think, sort of, so like Turnberry, I thought there's some brilliant holes out there.
Yeah.
But it falls away a little bit. And then I thought about Muirfield. I thought, right, what's the best holes at Muirfield? And I thought, well, there isn't really one hole at Muirfield. I think it's every hole is really good, but there's not like an iconic one, I think, that stands out. Maybe 18. But you started to understand there was a lot of, some courses were just strong all the way through, whereas other courses had real peaks, but then the troughs were like, you know, there's three or four, you're like, I never want to play this hole again in my life because they're just horrible. But really the ones that stood out for me were ones where they were fun. Yes, I enjoyed the architecture, but there was, I have had moments on it, both good and bad. And I think holes that strike up emotion in you are a consequence of how fun they are to play. Especially the ones where you're like, well, I could make, you know, par fives where I could make three, but I could make an absolute number here. and it could decimate my round.
Yeah.
So yeah, a personal emotion attached to them, and just and real fun. I wanted a scorecard where someone could go around, oh yeah, I could shoot 10 under around there, and the next day shoot like 10 over. So a real kind of a mixture.
Yeah, I think the variety aspect is key, isn't it? And you know, knowing that you can make anything from eagle to quad or whatever is quite exciting as the golfer. You make a really good shout on Muirfield, and I think we all commented on that, which was that you can pretty much have any hole from Muirfield, and it's perfect for dragging and dropping and filling any gaps. But like you say, it's not one hole that stands out, and there's courses that are the complete opposite, rather. I'm also interested, you know, the flow of a golf course, spacing of holes, you know, did you set yourself any sort of parameters or rules or things you wanted to achieve with it? You know, some courses build in difficulty, some just have like a banging opening from the minute go. You know, what was in your head?
Well, I wanted the par threes to be completely different. So I didn't want, you know, like three par threes or a 7 iron. And I tried to fit one more else in, or another one in, but I wasn't too sure about it. I wanted short fours for sure. They're like a feature of.
I think they're the best. I think it could probably be my favorite hole type. It's just a short par four.
Short fours were brilliant. And I also wanted someone who would turn around and go, right, you've got to make your score on 1, 2, 3. And then you got some tough shots coming up in the middle. And then, hold on, there's another scoreable stretch. And then had to be a bite at the end. There had to be a tough stretch where you're like, well, I'm going to either have to hold on or I'm going to have to go for broke and recapture, like if I hadn't made birdies. Because I think that puts pressure on you. When you get an easy stretch, it's a bit like playing when you play the old course, right? It's down out the left. And it's a strong wind, you're like, right, I need to make a score here going out. And if you don't make a score, you know all the way back you're in out the right, and it's going to be a pretty big challenge. So I like that idea where it's like it's fun holes where there's a lot of options off the tee where you can be like, right, I'm going to smash driver, or actually today I'm going to play it a 4 iron and a wedge, or a 4 iron and a 9 iron, so that every time you play the course, it's like completely different.
It's about the balance, isn't it? It's about that, and also just having options available. You know, I really like those golf holes where you can hit, you know, any one of 7 or 8 clubs off the tee, and then just throws you straight into then just like a pretty tricked up par three where you've then all of a sudden just got to step up and execute one club. Really cool exercise though. Really good fun. Are there any holes that, you know, one of the things we maybe skipped over when we did this was looking at the holes that had perhaps carried the biggest meaning to us personally? And I think every golfer's got those. I know those were quite key in yours. You know, tell us about some of those.
Yeah, so Merion, first of all.
That's your opener. That's first hole, Merion. What a bang.
Yeah, Merion East, so it's a short par four, but it's about it's all about everything before you hit the first tee shot. It's about driving into the clubhouse, you know, seeing the logo, which is like probably one of the coolest logos out there.
Yeah, without doubt. You know, without doubt, one of the coolest logos in the game, right?
But yeah, Marion's just, you know, you talk about the iconic pictures, you know, Ben Hogan hitting that one iron. So you stand the first tee, 18's right there. You can see the shot that he's hit. Then you've got not far from there down the hill, you go to 13 where Jones won the Grand Slam. And all these things you are seeing as you walk through the locker room, through the pro shop, all the history that it has. And probably particularly for me with Jones in the Grand Slam, like he won the US Amateur. I was fortunate to win that as well. And then you walk out and it's literally people just sitting there having lunch and you're teeing off and you can hear, you know, the cutlery and that it's that cool. I've got all this history and I feel engaged and sort of my day's been brilliant before I've even hit a shot. That's what it's all about. Yeah, you've probably just, you know, spent 3 months of your salary in the pro shop, but you know, I'll deal with that later on.
3 months at the absolute minimum there, Richie. It's a really cool way of putting your opening hole. I mean, interestingly, another course with crazy good proximity between first tee and clubhouse would be Royal Aberdeen, which I mean, maybe that's a 10 out of 10 segue for me, but yeah, Royal Aberdeen as a golf course is obviously a place that's really special to you. You know, obviously really important to you. Just tell us a little bit about Royal Aberdeen.
Yeah, so fortunate that I joined Royal Aberdeen when I was about 15. You know, to be honest, I played the Junior Open the year before, and I'd been a member at a place called Hazelhead, which was a municipal course designed by Alistair McKenzie. But then I played Royal Aberdeen, and I was just like, oh wow. Like every time you tee up, you're like, I'm gonna have to hit shots here. I'm gonna get crucified out there. And it was the challenge. It was the pure challenge of like, I can't just bring my sort of B and C game. I need to step up. There will be a time where we have to again talk about hitting shots under pressure. That's what I love. And I love just the natural flow of the course and the hills and the hummocks and the duneland and the sort of, you see the long stretch of beach going out. And to this day, it's not up there in my top 10 courses now, but it was when I was a junior. I think the original course there that I played was, in my mind, it was one of the best courses I have ever played. And unfortunately, it's changed now. Maybe sometime in the future the changes there might be rectified, but it's still a place that's very close to me and a lot of members, and the fact they helped me out when I turned pro. So there's a lot of things that go into that. And I've had some great times there, both on and off the course with the guys. I mean, I you know, when I play them, it's great fun, but once we step off the golf course, like I'm the one that gets it tight because you know they're the guys who can handle the drink and I can't.
Yeah, we had our first visit to Royal Aberdeen back in the summer. So big shout out to Jordan from Entourage Golf. What a fabulous day we had there, and what a great place it is. Real short question. What's it like walking into a clubhouse where you've got a painting of yourself hanging?
I'd say.
Do you get weirded out by it? Because, or do you just sort of like brush over it? I mean, if it was me, I feel like I'd be standing around with everyone making a big deal of it, but you're probably a lot more modest.
I don't know. It's a funny one. It's nice to have something up there because in years to come, it's going to be a cool thing, but yeah, I was like, I just sort of look at it and walk by it. I feel a little bit embarrassed, but at the same time proud because when I look to the side of it, I see that trophy and I just think it kind of, it means the world to me. So it's a, the painting's brilliant. I love it. But the title and everything means kind of more to me.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Just interesting. I've never really asked anyone that. What's it like when you're walking past a painting of yourself? I've got a sneaky suspicion that unless Cookie Jar does extremely well, far better than I think we would ever give it envisage, that it's probably something I will continue to only dream about before a portrait of myself appears at Blackwell Golf Club. So the 8th, Royal Aberdeen, something we share, features in my list as well. Just talk to us about that hole.
8 because it's really the first hole that comes back and plays into the wind, and you kind of get in a little bit of a comfort zone. You start cruising along there, right? The wind's sort of down off the left or down off the right.
Yeah.
And it's great. And then you may not have had it, but when I was a junior, you used to kind of, also you're smaller, but you used to walk through this valley or this corridor of like gorse. And then you step up these sort of, you go up the old wooden steps, the tees elevated up, and you can't see anything because of the gorse so high, and it sort of engulfs the walk from 7 to 8. And this is a point that is probably quite prevalent a lot in my holes, where you kind of, you don't see the hole, and you walk up and then suddenly you're just like, don't know what to expect, especially when you play it for the first time. And then there's just unbelievable vista.
It's a great reveal, isn't it?
Like,
yeah, great reveal.
Panoramas are 108, so you can see all the way up 9, the hole you're going to play. And then you sort of turn around and you see this stunning par 3 that's just absolutely surrounded by bunkers everywhere, and hills and hummocks and marram grass, like a long, thin green. And you can hit anything from a sandwich to a 5-iron into it. And it's the beauty straight away stuns you, I think. But then quickly you're kind of like, well, I'm gonna have to hit a golf shot here, and there's no getting away from this. And the idea that I know that, like, if you spin one up, it's like, oh, it's plugged in this bunker, and I could be going from bunker side to bunker side.
Yeah, it's because it's such a narrow green, isn't it? It's great if you hit the short stuff, but if you're short-sighted, or for that matter, any side of the green, you could just spend the next 20 minutes going backwards and forwards.
Yeah, it gives you that one where, go on, like, you've got a 9-iron in your hand. What's wrong with going for the flag? And then, you know, the devil on the other side, yeah, saying, like, yeah, you can do that. Or the angel on one side saying, you can do that. But the devil saying, like, Jesus, if you go for this, you're plugged in a bunker. Like, you could be taking 7. And things would be going really well for you. So it's one of those holes that it's just a stunning hole, and it gets your attention. And again, particularly with the sort of, they've extended the green up to the back. There's one where it's really tiny at the back. It's like 15 foot by 15 foot. And if you fly over that back, it's gone. I mean, you can lose a ball, anything. So it's just a fun hole to play. And you can make 2, walk off there, great, come back next time, make 6, and just think what happened there. You know, it's 5 minutes of hell for you. But yeah, just that kind of walking through that narrowness and then up into that open space with this sort of par 3 that sits there. And also the fact you can see up 9 is pretty cool.
Yeah. Another great golf hole.
Yeah, 8 and 9 are the two that I want to put them in. And I was subject to rules and fraction. I had to change that. So
someone's got to keep the rules here. Someone's got to keep us playing by the rules. Yeah. So, I mean, are there any other holes within here, Richie, that are kind of really, you know, I suppose important moments for you within your career, or places that strike a real sort of fond memory?
I mean, for me, all the places are places that have been, that I've played and really, really enjoyed. First and foremost, like, I've had fun playing the course. 17 and 18 are two places which are brilliant golf holes, I mean, the old, I'll start with 17, is that I've had, there's a picture of me, and I asked from one of the journalists, I hit, the amount of times I've hit putts on 17, and they were in the hole, and they've always breaks just that little bit more, you think, and misses. And there's one where I was chasing the Dunhill, and I've been to Dunhill since I was seven, pack lunches sitting over the back of the back of the wall, watching guys come down 17. And I remember chasing the lead there, and I thought if I could finish birdie, I could maybe post a number. And I remember hitting a putt there, and there was a step, and the putter was almost going up, and it dived and lipped out, and I just felt my knees, and there's a picture of me on the 17th green with my putter up, and me on my knees thinking, like, it was like, it's there, and it just, someone snatched out of my grasp. I made part of the last, and yeah. I think I just missed out.
That's just the 17th of the old course all over, isn't it? It's it's just constant despair, isn't it? You sort of feel like you've got the hard work done, and it just keeps taking, the whole hole just takes.
Yeah, and it throws up so much drama, and I understand, depending on which way where the pin is, you can play it 10 different ways. And just because it's like a personal battle, me against, I will get my own back on it. I will feel like I'm going to make a birdie and sort of have a run at the Dunhill, hopefully sometime soon. But it's like, if you pick one tournament, the Dunhill is really up there. Like, the Dunhill for me is a major. If I won the Dunhill, it'd be like, right, drop club, off the sunset, that's it. Like, I could walk away, and if I never hit a golf shot again, I could be a happy man, because it's that important to me. And the Island was probably the opposite of that. We had to play England in the European Under-21s, and we had a great team that year. We had myself, Scott Jameson, George Murray, Lloyd Saltman, Ken McAlpine, Wallace Booth. Really, really good team. And we're staying at Portmarnock Golf Links. So being in Ireland, there's something about it, the people, I don't know what it is, but we're all over 18, so it was better from that. It was a good banter team environment, and we were struggling. We're playing England in the final, and we're struggling a bit. I'll say six matches, and then it came down to myself and Scott. I think I was playing Jamie Moe, and I had this last hole. I hit great drive, sort of bottlenecks in between dunes. And if you miss your drive, you could have on the side of the hill, and it's quite a long hole, so you've got to pierce something for your second shot, like a 3-iron on the green. And if you miss it either side, it's a really tough chip. If you short side yourself, you're goosed. And the green's about 45 yards long. So I've like drilled this long iron, I think it was into the wind, and I've got about 30 feet. And I know, like, right, if I win my game, that gives us we've got like 1 point left, and we can win. And one of the guys who was watching was saying, it was funny, as you were over the ball, there was a falcon floating above the green, like waiting, as if it was a way to pounce on a rabbit or something. I don't know. It's just, that's what he's telling me. And I've like hit this putt from about 30 feet, and I'm like 10 feet out. I was like, this is going dead center. And I just gave him like massive fist pump, because it's Scotland versus England. Like, it's the closest I'm going to get to the call.
yeah, exactly. You're 18 years old. You're absolutely amped with testosterone, I can imagine. England, Scotland.
And then I remember JMO played great. He birdied 17, closed out his match, and we ended up winning. And we went out that night. There was like a free bar in the clubhouse, and went out in Malahide. And it was just like great team environment, really good guys, all fantastic players. Like, everybody had each other's back. You know, it's like, you would play with any of them, because you all knew they were class players. And then just to hold that putt, talk about hitting shots under pressure. And hitting shots under pressure is great when it's just you, but times that by 10 when you're playing a team event. And it was just a really cool moment, something that it's great playing on a European tour, but unfortunately we don't get to do, like play team events and root for each other just like that. So that was the sort of final hole in it, and I wanted it to be like a memorable, something that was memorable for me.
Yeah, something that's kind of special. You make an interesting point about team dynamics in golf, and it's just so rare, and maybe that's why it's so great, because we're not, it's kind of a fairly sort of scarce thing. But yeah, you know, when you're playing in those team environments, they often bring on some of the most memorable moments, you know, in golf. Are there any other holes where, you know, you were doing it was like, yeah, do you know what? I've got to have this in here. Like this one's straight on the scorecard, you know, or any other sort of slam dunks that were on there?
The ones that were easy straight off the bat were, for me, three at Castle Stewart.
Yeah, what a par.
Start that with three, and what a brilliant short par four.
Yeah, stunning.
Third hole on the course, you know, you can lay up every day. I remember playing there, hitting three wood, and it just fitted my eye really well. But you know, like if you miss it left, you've got those eyelids that you can't putt it. So it's like, I'm gonna have to lob this. And it is a hole. It's like, yeah, I make two, but I could make a complete and utter hash of it. It's like it's got a ton of options, angles. The vista is beautiful because you're kind of,
yeah.
One day you play it.
Yeah, stunning.
Yeah, and the water's way out, and the next day you play it, it'll be right in, up against the shoreline. And I know in your pod with Hans, I didn't realize at the time, but I love that way what he's done. He's kind of built the dune up so you can't see the next hole. So as you, the further along you get on the green, the more you feel you're out in sort of nature, and there's nothing there but you, and your eyes go out to the water and across to the sort of black aisle. And it was those like small touches that I thought were just absolute genius. And it's a fun hole to play, and I can play it. It's fun for me, but then you get the average members like, yeah, off the forward tee is like, he's able to knock it on the green as well. So, yeah, really cool hole. Yeah.
It's just a proper leveler, isn't it? As a golf hole, I think you know, we talked about on our podcast, but you know, you don't mind it being difficult, but you just don't want ball in pocket. You want it to be kind of a leveler to a point where everyone's in it. And I think, you know, Castle Stewart is very much the gold standard when it comes to that. Curious, any other holes where you were like, didn't expect that to be in there? Or, you know, real obvious picks?
Six at Carnoustie. Six was a tough hole to get. There was a lot of really cool holes that I could have picked, but that hole just always like, what am I going to do here? Depending on the wind, great. Like there's bunkers littered everywhere. All you see is white posts down the left, and you know in your back of your mind, you're like, well, if I lay up short of that, I've still got a tough second shot, and then I've got another third shot with the angle of the green, the slopes, and the bunkers.
Yeah, and the green's really tricky, and you just wouldn't expect it, would you? You know, but. You know, it's not just the tee shot. It's like everything from green to tee. You've got to get it away, and then you've got to hit several more good shots before you're going to, you know, give yourself a chance.
Yeah, and obviously, the best angle's coming from the left. Well, that's where the out of bounds is. And then, you know, the pin position makes a huge difference to the hole. You stick it at the back or anywhere on the right on those sort of downslopes, and then you turn around and say, well, you're going to be hitting a 5-iron in there for your third, and of course the way it's angled, it's a nightmare for a right-hander, because if you block it a bit, then you could leave yourself short and have a flop shot over the bunker. You just tug it, it's hitting the downslope and kicking it at the bunker. So it's a great hole, challenges you probably the most mentally out of all those holes, and you need to be diligent. Like, you lose your concentration and you're gone. You got to play that in the Dunhill every year. And I would say, like, you ask 100 guys, that would 50% of them would say, like, what's the hardest hole? That would come up quite a lot of the time, or the most that makes you think about a shot.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? The fact that you would expect, you know, Tour Pro to pick par fives being a real straightforward hole, and actually it's very much the exception as a par five to be a tricky one, I suppose. Anywhere you were really shocked? You were like, oh, do you know what? I did not expect to pick the fifth at Trump Dubai.
So I put Trump Dubai, and I would, first of all, I'm not a Trump supporter, and I don't want to make America great again.
No, not a Trump Dubai ambassador.
No, could you just put a little asterisk in there, just straight. So,
this is the one, that only one that got an emoji from me. So it came through as Trump Dubai 5 Hans / Wagner fire emoticon.
Yeah. So it was like massive, like huge fan of like Gil Hans and Jim Wagner, and obviously Castle Stewart being in there, probably one of the reasons. But this is like, I go there and practice quite a lot from Dubai, and the guys are really good. And it's like a semi-redan hole with it. Everybody talks about waste areas. And I was out there last week, and I'm like, these are natural, proper waste areas. Like, they're man-made, but they look just like the desert. As you drive out far in Dubai, it just looks exactly like that. And it's got really cool jagged edges down the left. It's got a huge feed in off the right, massive slope that you can feed in. So, you know, you can land it 40 yards short and feed it right to left. So again, it's good for me. It's good for the average golfer. And it was just that it's like a modern take on the Redan hole for me.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, it's not a template hole, but it's got similar vibes that, and I thought it was like, it looked so natural, but it's man-made. And you just look around there, this is really cool. And it's a long, it's like, you know, I was thinking of this trajectory. You're like, what shot do you want here? Well, you could sort of hit a high fade and hold it off from the slope, or you could hit that low stinger right to left and feed it in all the way. So again, it gives tons of different shots. And I thought it was a really cool par three that I enjoyed. And something that's totally different. And you can hit the ball 10 feet off the ground, or you can hit the ball 150 feet up in the air, and you can still get the ball could pitch in the same place.
Yeah. Very cool. Any courses you've not managed to get in here? I found that there was always a couple where you were like, oh, how have I not got that one in yet? You know, anywhere you just couldn't squeeze it in because you'd have had to move something around, or, you know, couldn't get around a certain hole.
At Turnberry.
Really?
For sure, yeah. Like, it's straight in my head, and I was thinking of all this. And I haven't played it since the changes. So I played it last time the Open was there, and I played it before that. So when 9 was kind of like a huge camber, you had hit over like a blind shot over a hill.
Yeah.
So Turnberry came straight to mind. There was a lot of courses when I played when I was young that I think I would have put a hole in, but it was just so long ago that I couldn't remember it. So it was like, I used to go and play Carbridge, which is like a really cool 9-holer. Newton Moore, Canusi, Bankray, Ballester, all those courses that are up D side. So if you were in Aberdeen, you would just go straight west and follow the D up the river. So a lot of those courses when I played when I was younger, there was always one or two holes in there that I thought were really, really cool. And the holes of the courses that I haven't played, it was literally, well, I played Sabonic, there's some holes there. Shinnecock, I was looking for it. Shinnecock was other big name course that I couldn't fit a hole in. It was a lot. Yeah. I wanted to put 11 in there, the par three, but I couldn't have, yeah, because it's a cool par three, but I couldn't have back-to-back par threes with Augusta. And I had to put 12 was like the other one. It's like, it's going in. Can't take that out. I wanted to put 13 in, but again, couldn't break the rules.
No, you couldn't get one in there. Incredible. Nice problem to have, though, we'll add.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a problem. It's a problem I've got, but for altogether different reasons, I suppose.
The two that I realized were similar, and I hadn't even thought of this, were Shinnecock and Muirfield, from the fact that, right, which will stand out? And you're like, God, there isn't really any poor holes on them, but there isn't two or three that are, for me, just for me personally, are like unbelievably iconic. 18, you hit up there, you're thinking that for Shinnecock, but I just thought they were both really, really strong. I played Sabonic, which is obviously Doak and Nicholas, and it's got some cool holes on it, but I couldn't put that in. Fisher's Island, Pine Valley and Cypress are the ones that I would love to play.
Yeah, you and me both there, I think, Richie.
I've been to Maidstone, haven't played it. And then all the Surrey courses, I thought there would be a hole in there that I put in, but I haven't played many of them. I've also played Sunndale, both old and new. I didn't get any new Sunndale new holes on, which,
yeah,
that's quite a surprise. But I had them list. I'm like, well, I'll put this in, and I was like, no, that.
Such a great little collection of par threes. Some of the best threes, really, you'll see on one course in the world.
Yeah, I just couldn't fit it in. And it was like, it was doing my head in. And like you say, there's some courses that are brilliant. Looking at it, I was like, oh, that's cast iron going there. And I was like, that doesn't fit. There's another par three. Or the problem I was having was back-to-back par fives, especially on the back nine. But I thought that could be... I actually don't mind the idea of back-to-back par fives, 13 and 14. But I put the short hole in at Loch Lomond, the 14th, because that's just one of my favourite golf courses in the world. And it's a real...
Yeah.
It's probably not the best hole in the course. Well, I wanted to put... Well, that was the problem. So I wanted 12 in at Loch Lomond. That is a... I love 12. Love 12. But I'm like...
Can't beat Augusta. Can't trump it.
Yeah, yeah. It's like Augusta has, it's got the veto over anything. It's like, no, can't use that. Like, and I wanted, obviously, I'm thinking of the open courses, they came to mind, like what holes. And St. George is, I like, but, you know, I couldn't really fit anything there. They've got a lot of challenging holes, particularly down the stretch.
For Royal St. George's has been a very popular pick, but like you say there yourself, you know, you've started with three par fours, so it's like, oh, do I want another one? Is it time for a par three? Or yeah, the other thing I noticed you talking about there, the stuff you played as a junior, but it's recency bias is massive,
right?
You know, there's so many courses that I've played as a kid that I know would have made the list, but you just can't remember them as clearly, can you? So, you know, I know, like Brancaster, for instance, there would be a load of holes there that I'd have loved to have picked. But just, you know, it's recency bias.
Right.
I guess now's probably the time for the big reveal on the scorecard. But when I've done the yardage for this, I've tried to put you off the very back peg. So there's a few sort of open venues here that increase the yardage of the course, but you've got a very traditional par 72, 2 9 to 36, coming in at 6,622 yards. Was that what you were sort of aiming for?
Not really. I've just realised, well, I've only got one par five in the back nine. What a rookie move that is.
This is what we've settled on now, Richie. You can't go changing it now.
I've got, you know what? I showed my coach tonight and he's like, What are you putting that in there for? And I'm thinking to myself, oh, I've F this up. And I've got
fully committed now.
I've got to stick with it. We'll go with it.
So 2 9s are 36. Merry and East, we know that's the opener. Port Stewart, hole number two.
It's mega, mega, mega hole. I could have put any one of the front nine at Port Stewart, probably the most underrated nine in the British Isles for me. Like, just mega. I just, such a good, such a cool, cool front nine. Landscape, golf holes, fun. Just brilliant. Love that place. And it's like a, you could hit driver off there and try and peg it up there, and or you could just hit an iron, but it's just the whole, the dunescape here is amazing.
So we go Merion, Port Stewart, Castle Stewart we've talked about, short par four, fourth hole par five, Wentworth, Championship. Fifth at Trump Dubai, sixth at Carnoustie. Then we go Cran-sur-Sierre, seventh hole. Short par four, 303 yards. Little dogleg right. Nice little, another sort of little short length. Royal Aberdeen 8. And, of course, Royal County down 9th. An extremely popular pick. Sunningdale 10. Another fan. Sunningdale Old, I should say, 10th. Troon, the 11th. The railway hole. Looks absolutely magnificent. You know,
it's just a menace. Absolute menace, that hole. Oh,
it's a real tough
can't,
one.
Can't see the fairway, just a sea of gorse in front of you, and it's angled for the right-hander. So if you just don't have the balls and turn it over, you're in the gorse. And if you just push it right and try and get cute with it, it's in the gorse again. And that's not where you're not over. You're like, if you bail left because you've got the railway line all the way down the right, you've got a pot bunker, you've got a pitch over, and you can fight it in low and run up the bank, which is really cool. And it's just, obviously, it's the start of the onslaught. Like, if the wind comes in off the sea, in at the left, not back nine, arguably the hardest back nine in golf. I mean, I was just hitting wood rescue, four iron, six iron, wood in half of them.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's tough, yeah.
Well, that's, you know, the nature of what you're trying to achieve, I guess, is something that builds in difficulty. Then we go 12th at Augusta, the 13th at Leopard Creek, Loch Lomond 14, Muirfield 15, 16 Calamity Portrush, Old Course, the island, to close on the 18th. Augusta 12th, is that the prize pick of the par threes?
Yeah, it's just, I mean, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the sixth that they at Port Stewart, I wanted to put in there, but I had a fight with Carnoustie and I needed a five in there. So I couldn't put back to back par threes. But 12th Augusta, oh my goodness. Wow. Like, probably the best hole in golf for me, like, just for pure drama. Because it's just, I mean, literally, if you're a member there and you only have, you know, six balls in your bag at that point, you're thinking to yourself, am I going to finish this hole? Because you could be there all day. The most beautifully terrifying hole you will play, because it is stunning and you can get lost in the beauty there. But, I mean, the wind there is like a nightmare. You need a PhD to work that out, what's going on there. And just, you've seen it. It happens all the time. It's drama, isn't it? It just creates drama just because of the design. It's such a cool... I mean, you could play that hole 18 times and you'd be happy. But, yeah, it had to be in there. That was the cast iron one that can't... Nothing can beat that in my mind.
I think a brilliant way to close the podcast. Richie, thank you so much for being our guinea pig and throwing yourself into the exercise. Sounds like you lost a bit of sleep throughout the process, but it's been really cool chatting that through with you.
No, it was brilliant. Thanks very much for having me on. It's another interesting thing for anybody to do, and do it with their mates. Like, it's just it fires up some good conversation, and for me, like, some great memories of playing courses and whether they be good or bad. But like I say, that's that's the genius of playing golf, that it actually creates emotion. And that's why you remember stuff. That's where you remember great days out with the boys, or maybe winning a junior medal, or winning a European Tour event in some cases. So, it was a cool exercise. Thanks for having me on.
It's been an absolute pleasure. We're wishing you all the very best for the upcoming season, and looking forward to when we tee it up together as well at some point. But until then, adios.
Cheers, boys. Watch this.